It seems after the first two lines I drift off in contemplation and never can hit it right on the head. 30. Dale's take on contemplation is that it is a pondering sort of meditation. As to meditating, well, yes I do, but not in some Eastern religious form, or petitioning by prayer, but by pondering things, that is a large portion of myself. I wish to know the Creator and where I fit into the creation. That is how I came up with my simple saying, as I ponder God. 359. Chapter 11. Mystical tools for growth. I am God pondering himself. 31. It is to be noted here, Dale, that the deity is not necessarily exclusively masculine. Those of you who suggest that contemplation is a good tool for examining the emotions that have arisen within us, in meditation, allow the silence to do its work. But in contemplation, simply allow the self to move into those states of emotion that arise. Feel that state, enter into every nook and cranny of this emotion or of this nexus of emotions. Allow association to move your feelings and see if there is a constellation of events or memories that seems to trigger this same type of emotional response. In this way you are working on your consciousness without departing from the situation at hand, for there is a self that is beneath all of these experiences that come within the incarnation. As one goes through the illusion day by day, one can more and more find composure where formerly there was can fly, simply because the attitude of faith has begun to take root and the need is not felt so quickly to move into patterns that take one away from faith and into the doubtful waters of opinions and words and points of view. 32. In a way, we can think of contemplating as sitting with something, like our own emotional state, simply sitting and keeping company with it, and allowing whatever responses emerge to do so. We can do the same with any idea we wish to ponder in an unhurried manner. Contemplation, just as much as meditation, is a tool for taking the fragments of catalyst and experience which we have undergone and integrating them into our deeper nature. In each infinitesimal part of yourself resides the one in all of its power. Therefore, we can only encourage these lines of contemplation or prayer as a means of subivali, objectively using or combining various understandings to enhance the seeking process. Without such a method of reversing the analytical process, one could not integrate into unity the many understandings gained in such seeking. 33. One method of contemplation that gives many real pleasure is interaction with nature. It is a favorite activity of mine to weed in Jim's gardens. As I gently pluck the false strawberry and the ground ivy from the planned plantings, or deadhead the overripe blossoms of the flowers, I feel the strength of the earth pouring into my body, and the perspire of a wider. 360. Chapter 11. Mystical tools for growth and higher point of view settling into my mind. Mary also finds this helpful. When I get the blues, I sit out on the back patio and talk to my container vegetable garden. In the past, when I had land for a big garden, I found peace in my garden pulling weeds, pruning, singing to the baby bunnies that lived under our shed. I really didn't care when people said I was crazy. I still don't. I find much joy in immersing myself in God's creations. I watch the flowers bloom in the spring and the leaves turn to beautiful colors in the fall. And when I reach a point of awe, I begin to lose the blues. 34. Nature cures the blues for me often, too. Karen Pekarsik likes to take a nature walk as her form of contemplation. She says, "My morning walk through nature is my second most cherished time of the day. I spend an hour walking in nature, observing life around me, and finding that same life abiding within me. This is the time I take to further connect with my inner self, that little inner voice who usually cannot be heard above the noise of the rush of the day. My favorite place is a bridle trail which has overgrown trees and vegetation, making it an owl forest in the midst of the city. I find this spot is a magical place for me. As soon as I step onto its winding dirt path, I become a new person. I am revitalized. I am reconnecting with the beauty of nature around me. And I am thankful I have so much beauty around me, and the time to wander through its trail, soaking up its healing energy into my hungry body. I am truly blessed to be able to take the time to meander through this magical place in my neighborhood. In the serenity of this magical forest, I am able to think clearly. I find myself detaching from my sometimes aching body, questioning mind, and up and down emotions, and becoming a living, breathing entity, just being, living and moving in a sea of energy. Life just is during this special time. I become one with life, and life becomes me. There is no hurry or worry. All is peaceful and serene. I feel a deep cry into the life energy mingling in the vegetation of the forest. I am happy to be one with the beauty of nature all around me. I take this beauty with me, to cherish throughout my day, to keep me on track with my emotions, and to stay calm through my many challenges. 35 Karen really catches the essence of contemplation here. Another wonderful place to be with nature is anywhere that there is water, whether a pond, fountain, creek, river or ocean. Water is a truly magical substance, and the sound of its placid plashing in our gardens is a great blessing to me. My 361, Chapter 11, Mystical Tools for Growth. Favorite place to take a holiday is by the sea, and to walk on the beach at any hour of the day or night is always a joy and an invitation to muse. Seeing the horizon and the curve of the earth just has to shake the provincial thinking loose from our wee minds. Whether we are contemplating ocean, sky, stars, a perfor or chiefly imperfect blossom, or any other natural object, we are, perhaps inadvertently, looking into the Kyrians between all natural things. Marty Upson puts it this way: I believe that focusing on the Kyrian of all things is a valid form of meditation, eyes wide open. I think a valuable exercise or meditation would be wakeful awareness of how all things care, whether it be in nature, ecologically or whatever. 36 Those of you who expand on this thought, in the case where meditation has become difficult or impossible to the self as it perceives the situation, we would suggest some physical means, however momentary, of dwelling within the creation of the Father. Contemplate the sun, which gives so generously that life and light which is so welcomed as the springtime nears. Stand beneath the tree which is generating itself from light and offering oxygen to its companions upon the earth plane, the human and all animals, while all animals move about their business, breathing out just that which trees and plant life need, your carbon dioxide. Observe the way in which events fall, seeming, when looking back upon them, so right, so inevitable. Gaze about the self to find any arrhythmic or out-of-place detail in the creation of the Father. Is there any except that which man has imposed upon the creation of the Father? ? 37 We have to look a long time to find nature being awkward. But nature is not the only object of contemplation upon which we can usefully focus. There is the infinitely large area of our thoughts, questions, wanderings, hopes and dreams. Don, my beloved companion and research partner of many years, was a contemplator of the philosophical sort. He almost never sat in formal meditation except at group meetings, but loved to sit and think. I have very fond memories of him through the years, reclining in our hammock or couch on his hard-earned days off, one finger drawing endlessly in the air, seemingly writing invisible words and symbols. He would happily do this for hours. Some might call this daydreaming or wool gathering, but I knew he was doing real spiritual work. If this reminds you of yourself, I encourage you to continue to dream your dreams. It is the contemplators and dreamers of this world who give our budding global mind hope and healing. Those of you who suggest one final use of Contempla, 362, Chapter 11, Mystical Tools for Growth. At the end of the day, to of the personal healing of our day. This is the short version of the balancing meditation previously discussed in Chapter 8. The first item on the agenda is to know, in a systematic and organized fashion, oneself. This is done by examining the reactions one has had and the behavior one has advertently or inadvertently done during the day. It is best done in contemplation or analysis in the last portion of the day, perhaps when one is drifting off to sleep. And if there has been difficulty and pain to you, your first duty and honor is the healing of yourself. You must be your mother in the sense that the Creator is your mother. You must nurture and cradle yourself and allow the hurt to fall from you, allow forgiveness to pour into you, for there is no end to forgiveness if it comes through the entity and not from the entity. 38. Devotion. Since I am at heart a devotee, and since I am attempting to live a devotional life, I naturally consider devotion a central key to unlocking the secrets of a spiritually well-lived life. It is, more than a lot of resources of mysticism, a various tool. Let us look at the two thrusts of this word, devotion, separately. Firstly, let us take devotion in its purer sense, which is as a straight translation of the word from its Latin antecedent, devotio, meaning to devote or to vow. It implies the qualities of loyalty, faithfulness and deep affection. In this sense, I am utterly devoted to deity and to deity's mystery. It calls me as nothing in my life ever has. Its power over me is complete. What I want to do, first of all, is live my life as an expression of this amazing love I feel for the infinite creator. Romy Borrell describes this emotion beautifully. I'm in love with the creator. I am happiest when I feel I have his undivided attention. I honor him with thanks. I wrap myself in his love and wisdom in meditation. I call out to him to come to me every night before I go to sleep. I yearn for him. I call out not from my mind but from my very soul. My heart aches for my oneness with him. I hear love songs and don't think of lovers. I think of the Creator. Now, you see? Just like any woman in love here, I've gone and rambled on and on about my undying yearning for the great love in my life. 39. My general concept of devotion is that it is a quality of focused love that can be brought to bear on any aspect of the work and doings of the Physi. 363. Chapter 11. Mystical Tools for Growth. Gal, Outer Life. Generating devotion is a matter of discovering ourselves, feeling the emotions of devotion, and consciously encouraging these emotions within ourselves. We can practice this when we are meditating, when we are walking, or when we are doing any form of spiritual work. It is an expanding, a welling up, a strengthening of emotion beyond the everyday, and to some extent it can be trained into the self as a habit of mind. Needless to say, excessive expressions of devotion can drive the bystanders crazy. The Hare Krishnas, with their sharing of joy at ball games and street corners, or Jehovah's Witnesses going door to door to talk about their faith, can easily be seen as moving from appropriate behavior into proselytizing and infringing on others' free will. But here I am not talking about that kind of religious devotion, but about the spontaneous development of our love of the Creator. However, we find it possible to generate this devotional emotion within ourselves. When we feel the well of devotion overflowing, we can easily put our minds to how to express this loving attitude. For any activity in the world can be done with devotion, and thusly made holy. Those of you who say, as the emotions of devotion are turned towards the environment of the existing life and gazed at with an eye to being one who offers the positive point of view, then you may see that in any circumstance an entity with a positive, affirmative and hopeful point of view may well be foolish, which is acceptable in third density, indeed, almost necessary, for who but a fool would take the leap of faith that would say, I do not need to be concerned about my path of service, for I see in front of me a dish to wash, a compost heap to turn, a child or a friend to hug and share love with. 40. As we dwell in devotional states, we are winding the coil of our desire and empowering our polarity. As I said, the word, devotion, has a split meaning. We have considered the first, general sense of the word, and address now the more specialized, religious sense of devotion, for every religion has its traditions of mystical seeking and devotion. In this sense, the word is synonymous with piety, devoutness and religious worship. In its plural sense, devotions refers to prayer, which we will take up next. As those of L. Lima say, not all seekers will be able to use devotion as a tool in the religious sense, but it makes sense to explore all religious systems of myth available to us, to determine whether they might be useful paths for us. We ask you to spend time gazing upon the face of deity, however you may find it and by whatever names you preserve it. It is a good thing to be what you are, and what you are will grow and change and transform, 364, Chapter 11, Mystical Tools for Growth. Yet it is likely that one pattern or another is most likely congruent with your vibratory energy pattern. Thusly, not all of you will be Christians, not all of you will be Sufis, and so forth. Yet all these strew you as yield the same living water. All are channels through which this water may flow, and it is the discipline and devotion and firm intention to follow the example set before you that will open to you the consciousness which all have come to give, that one consciousness of the one Creator. You have within you that one Creator, and, in far, in the end you shall be that one Creator. 41 Those of you who also suggest are looking carefully at revealed religion for the one story that especially tugs at our hearts. Each story appeals to those of a certain temperament. This entity has a temperament which finds the story of Jesus the Christ most helpful. Thus, it has become this entity's way to objectify the shuttle of spirit, and to open within the heart and within the consciousness the gateway to intelligent infinity. There are other stories, many and various. We ask not that the spiritual seeker choose any particular one. We do ask that the seeker choose, and, having chosen, never look back. It may take as long as you wish in the incarnation to make that choice, but when the choice is clear, it is very well to move upon that path with the greatest intensity and devotion possible, for what you wish to do as a unique consciousness, or soul, is to become more and more powerful in the metaphysical sense. Until you have done the work of spirit involved in discovering the imperishable part of yourself, until you have made and dedicated the choice of how to love the infinite Creator, the Self and all other entities, polarization cannot begin in any settled form which may deliver one more reliably into a denser light, and a more skillful use of that light in being and in manifestation, but most importantly in being. 42 If we look through all the mythical and religious strew you as a thought open to us and are inspired by none of them, then we can cross religious devotion off of our list of spiritual resources. But as a practicing Christian, I can testify to the efficacy of the religious system of my church in aiding my practice of devotion. In the first place, here is an excellent chance for weekly group worship, where the devoted faithful meet in spiritual community. We are able to hear inspirational readings, beautiful music, hopefully thought-provoking sermons, and we are able to pray together. Further, we are able to relate to each other as members of a spiritually based group, reaching out to each other in a spirit of love and understanding it would be impossible to. 365, Chapter 11, Mystical Tools for Growth. Generate within most secular environments, and reaching out to the neighborhood around the parish in a ready response to felt need. We experience the changes in the ordo throughout the so-called church year, which take the worshipper through seasons of rejoicing, hope, confession and dedication, as well as epiphany and utter awe. Each religious system has such helpful strewures within its prices. Before ridging religions entirely, shop the supermarket, read some holy works and books about myth, especially when written by authors who infuse the topic with spirit-animating understanding, like Joseph Campbell. Don't ridge the systems until we are familiar with their basic natures through reading or experience. Religious devotion has shown itself in some extreme ways. Within the Christian Church, the prices of self-flagellation and fasting have long been tools of devotion. I am not one to recommend self-flagellation, despite its ancient antecedents. The whole thrust of such a discipline is to underscore to the self the wickedness of the body, to see the body as something evil and dangerous to the spirit. But I do not see the spirit as over against the body, but unified with the body, in that the body can express itself in sacred ways in all aspects of life. Rather than flagellation, then, rather than beating oneself with wood or whips or by wearing itchy hair shirts, we can far more gently express moderation and discipline to the body by our choices of what we leave undone and unsaid, especially under duress. Fasting is a good, funcional tool of devotion when we are attempting to express to ourselves that a certain excess is not acceptable to the self. We can fast from cross words, blame, sex, anger, guilt over what is long gone, resentment, or from food or drink. We can fast from any avidity or quality we deem excessive within our price. We do need to be aware that if we do such disciplines of denial, we will almost certainly draw the attention of lower astral entities whose enjoyment is tempting seekers from their discipline. The fasting itself, though an attempt to gain true balance, is somewhat unbalanced in that it is the self, working on the self, not spontaneously allowing things to drop away of their own accord but ordering repression from the executive level. When we fast, we are rushing our progress. As in any situation where we are basically ahead of our power base, we lack balance. And so the testing will occur. Meet such testing and temptation with humor and the light touch as well as determination. What we are saying when we discipline ourselves, besides that we want to lose weight or remove anger or whatever, is that we are not any quality or avidity, but rather that we are existing first of all as children of the Creator. Those of you who say, concerning fasting, 366, chapter 11, mystical tools for growth that each known to you as Jesus the Christ fasted often, wishing to achieve not a pure life so much as an altered state of consciousness wherein the physical entity dropped away from consciousness and a union with the Father became possible. To the one known as Jesus, fasting was simply a means of altering the consciousness and building more and more the tested and sure bond this entity found with the Father, whose son he always felt that he was. It is not in fasting, precisely, that our recommendations lie, but rather in a shift of focus, an alteration in our use of vocabulary, for the one known as Jesus the Christ stated during one confrontation with that portion of the Creator known as Satan, that man does not live by bread alone, but rather from every word which falls from the mouth of the Creator. This entity was expressing a principle, and the entity's use of the word word, when saying that man lives by every word of the Father, was intended to be that which we would call the Logos or love. 43 If you are interested in the discipline of denial and fasting, then, arm yourself with the awareness that it is easy to try to go faster than you comfortably can, and although this feels very right in the spiritual sense, it may be that going this quickly makes unacceptable demands on your body or your mental and emotional states. It is most often the case that the one who too quickly undertakes the higher spiritual, almost discarnate skills of devotion, may well have been leaving behind an neglected body, an unloved body, and without the knowledge to do any other. 44 By all means, evaluate your condition of body, mind and emotion, and invoke patience, for devotion is an art as well as a tendency of the heart, and moderation and tenacity may be qualities to be invoked. Now, the seeker has a craft to learn and there are the scales that must be played again and again and again. There are scales which teach the notes of patience. There are scales which teach the notes of devotion. There are other exercises that teach the spareness and the reserve of true service. And these exercises must be repeated, and certainly for the seeker to become inwardly focused and moving in small circles is completely understandable and acceptable. 45 To go slowly is totally acceptable in pricing devotion. After all, we have a lifetime of days in which to work. More than almost any other tool, pure devotion can be priced anywhere, anytime, and in a stunning variety of 367, chapter 11. Mystical tools for growth ways according to our intuition and feelings of the moment. May we find its rich fruits sweet. Prayer, what a blessing prayer has been to me. From my first reaching for the hand of Jesus as a baby to the extremes of the decidedly various conversations I have had with my deity, prayer has been my faithful companion through life. I have offered prayers of praise, thanksgiving, deep anger, grief and sorrow. I have offered everything of myself, daily, for decades. The consolation this has been to me is inestimable. The stereotype of prayer is hardly as enticing as this broad description. When I think of prayer, my mind immediately goes to those cultural icons, the folded hands and bowed head, or the wailing wall with its rocking Hasidics, or priests I have known who take memorizing prayers to new depths of ultra pietism. We tend to think of prayer as the rote repetition of words learned in early childhood, words which may have meant little to us then and perhaps less to us now. Donald Walsh did prayer a favor when he titled his book series, Conversations with God. For now, at least, there is that phrase to create a good description of prayer. Those of Ra call prayer a faculty of the will. The faculty of will called praying is also of a potentially helpful nature. Whether it is indeed an helpful activity depends quite totally upon the intentions and objects of the one who prays. 46 It is easy to think of prayer as a way of asking for or willing what we desire. And for some of us, praying for help in a crisis is the extent of our previous price of prayer. But if we leave prayer until we are petitioning the Creator each time we pray, our use of this flexible and supple resource of the mystical mind is stingy. Those of you who say, we suggest the encouragement within the self of praise and thanksgiving for all, large and small, of the ephemeral world that may meet the senses. Prayer, praise and thanksgiving are three resources that add and strengthen the Kayan to faith. 47 I would like to foster that feeling of the fullness of prayer. Moments of gratitude are prayers. Meditation is a silent prayer. Contemplation is a guided prayer. Devotion is living as a prayer. In prayer, I sense myself being held in a safe and loving hand, and there is a security though that is lacking in physically based living. As we converse in prayer with the living Creator, we become more and more fully aware that the Creator is alive, well and in love. 368, Chapter 11, Mystical Tools for Growth with Us. Even the most uncertain prayers become fervent when this presence is perceived, and if we persist in prayer, we will perceive this presence. We will find it subtly undeniable. We may never be able to defend it to someone else, but as we price the presence of the one infinite Creator by talking with it, we experience that feedback, that back pressure of presence, that speaks profoundly to us. I remember suggesting to my mother, at a dark time in her life, that she pray. She responded that there was no one there. Mother was hard-headed, and wanted something linear to hold on to begin. I suggested that she try talking to her bedpost, the one at the right-hand foot of her bed. Do not try to pray at first, I said, just talk to your bedpost about the things that are troubling you. I felt that she knew the bedpost was there, so that would soothe her unbelief. And it did. Rapidly, she became aware of a tremendous presence which was invoked when she began to talk to her bedpost. She started leaving the bedpost out of it, for she became aware of the presence of the Creator itself. For the last decade of her life, my mother lived by prayer. It became the most real and deep focus of her life. Her thirst for prayer turns my thoughts to this from Rumi Borel, the most helpful words of all, to me, come from Paramahansa Yogananda, to coax him to give himself takes steady unceasing zeal. Nobody can teach you that zeal. You have to develop that yourself. When you have an immense thirst for the divine, when you will not give undue importance to anything else, then he will come. When your heart call is intense, when you accept no excuse, then he will come. 48 In a paraphrase of Veni Creator Spiritus, translated into English by Robinus Morus in the 9th century, the plea is, teach us to speak, teach us to hear, yours is the tongue and yours, the ear. I love that sense that prayer indeed gives us, of being a part of a circle of Creator and created, love and union. We do well to cultivate that thirst for completing the circle of conversation. Those of you who also suggest that prayer is conversation, we would substitute for prayer the term, conversation, for prayer is a word which in your culture has many negative connotations concerning the feelings of lack of faith, lack of confidence, lack of worth and similar shadows. It also is connoted with the concept of the elite, as though some were more able to pray or had more right to pray than others. We would instead call prayer a conversation with infinite intelligence. In this conversation, the seeker speaks his mind as it is given him to do. Infinite intelligence responds in silence and in power, and, free will being observed, destiny moves on, fed to some degree. 369, Chapter 11, Mystical Tools for Growth by this Interion. More than this, He who converses with infinity grows more and more full of this energy, which is the reflex of this conversation, the silent encouragement of the infinite for the seeker within illusion. 49 And encouragement there is, which enhances the thirst for the divine that is within us. I believe it is an instinct within humankind to seek its creator. The urge is so deep that we see all societies of whatever level of civilization pricing prayer and meditation, contemplation and devotion. 131 talks about this thirst. It seems like learning to pray and to not pray in a harmful manner is a critical thing.